All right, we'll see. Can everybody hear me? Perfect. So I am from the great state of North Dakota, and since this conference is all about reproduction and technology and things like that, we're going to talk about some technology from my state. So the state of technology. This is a report that came from the New York Times, and there's some archaeologists out there that dug down 10 feet. They dug 10 feet down and found some copper wire. They looked at that, did some carbon dating on it, and said that was from 100 years ago. Conclusion was that the ancestors had developed a telephone network 100 years ago. Going to the LA Times, the archaeologists, they dug down 20 feet. They said they can't be outdone by these people out on the East Coast. So they dug down 20 feet, found copper wire. Copper wire was dated 200 years ago. Conclusion they had? 100 years before New York, people out in L.A. had an advanced network of communication. So, I'm going to go to an article that was from the Bowman County Pioneer. So, Bowman County is southwest part of North Dakota, rather. Pretty much center of the U.S., east-west. Pioneer talked about this guy named Ole. And Ole was a self-taught archaeologist. So, Ole went out into one of his pastures, and he starts digging. And he dug down 10 feet, didn't find anything there. He dug down 20 feet, didn't find anything there. Dug down 30 feet, didn't find anything there. So what's old Ole say about this? 300 years ago, North Dakota had already gone wireless. So with that backwards thinking, now I'm going to talk a little bit about estrus synchronization and subsequent breeding with natural service. So a little bit of deviation from some of the other topics that are out there. We all know this graph very, very well. This looks at the proportion of cattle that are bred with different methods. So specifically here, looking at these bars with the exposure to bulls. That's the only breeding method that they're used. Bull breeding dominates the U.S. beef industry. We look over here, we're spending a lot of time talking about artificial insemination in these sessions. We really like to get more breeding with AI, enhance some of the reproductive performance of our cattle. But this is what we're dealing with. The vast majority of our producers are using bulls for their breeding. So on the avenue of talking about synchronization with natural service, broke it down into three main categories. The first one is some factors about bulls. The second one is, the cow influence. What do we need to be concerned with on the cow side? And then the third is actual protocol options. So these are a little bit different than what we have for our current recommendations in terms of synchronization for artificial insemination. There we go. So starting out with the bulls. We're going to break this down into, ultimately what we want to do is get to the most common question that there is in terms of synchronization with natural service. And that's how many cows can one bull cover? What are my stocking rates? Okay, those are the questions that people want to get to. But in order to do that, we need to talk about these other items. We need to talk about age, breeding soundness, and libido. The first little chart here is going to talk about age. And we'll set this graph up a little bit. Across the top, we've got bull age, 1 year old, so yearling bulls, 2 year olds, and then bulls with 3 plus years. And then we've got a couple of different factors on there. We've got the number of mounts that these bulls actually attempted, the number of services. So what is a service? It takes three things to actually have a service. You need an erection, you need an intromission, and you need an ejaculation. So this paper actually goes down and breaks out all three of these items. I skipped that and just went into services. Next thing on the list is the proportion of females that were actually in heat that were serviced by a bull. And then of those females that were serviced, how many actually became pregnant? Final on there is overall pregnancy rate of these different ages of bulls. Want to draw your the other thing to point out here is that this activity, these cattle were synchronized, this activity happened over a 30 to 48 hour period. So these are all these cattle that are synchronized within 30 to 48 hours. First one I'm going to point out is mounts. Okay, we've all put yearling bulls out on pastures before. We kind of seen how that activity works out. It doesn't say if they're mounting the front end of the cow or the back end of the cow or anything else. It just says that they're mounting, right? As we go from a yearling, we get more experience there. The number of mounts just progressively decreases. Now, when we look, there's no difference really in the number of services that are out there, or the proportion of females that are in heat that were actually serviced. But there is a difference in pregnancy rates. So see, as we get into these yearling bulls, significantly lower pregnancy rate compared with those other two age classes. Okay, so this really highlights the fact that we want to stay away from yearling bulls in terms of which bulls to select when we want to breed with estrus synchronization. All right, breeding soundness exams. Breeding soundness exams, we like to do these yearly. We go in and we evaluate certain physical attributes of the bulls themselves. Can I see cows across the pasture? Can I walk from point A to point B to get cows bred? So those are the physical things. We do an evaluation of semen, motility, morphology, and these are an indicator of fertility. And when I say indicator of fertility, breeding soundness exams are really good at cutting off the bottom portion of bulls. Say these bulls are likely to not get cattle pregnant, so that's from the breeding soundness exam question. Now, the particular paper that is mentioned here, what they did is they looked at different categories of bulls. Okay, if you have breeding soundness exam now, you have a satisfactory, yes, this bull passed. At the time this paper was written, it was called a questionable. Now I believe it's called a deferred. So we're going to defer. We're going to come back and recheck that bull later. And then the third category is just fail. He didn't cut it. Okay. So the authors of this paper, they looked at those bulls that were satisfactory and passed, those bulls that were questionable or deferred, and looked at the, again, these are synchronized females, okay, and a single sire per pasture. Okay. And those bulls that did pass the breeding soundness exam, again, much greater pregnancy rate compared with those that were questionable. If you look at the overall preg rates, you see, yeah, these are kind of low. Again, very short breeding seasons. This isn't, you know, our extended typical 60 to 90-day breeding season. These are under 40 days. Okay. The breeding soundness exam, however, you may get an indication that he's maybe fertile. It tells you nothing about libido, though. And libido is something that can certainly play a big role in a bull's ability to go out and service 20 to 30 cows within a three-day period. So in order to evaluate libido, how do we go about doing this on farm? Okay, well, from a research standpoint, people talk about service capacity tests. Anybody familiar with service capacity tests? Okay, we've got a bunch of people here who have done them. The paper's outlined here. You take some non-estrus females, okay? You sedate them, put them in a halter, kind of put them up in a pen. And then you introduce a bull for about 10 minutes and see what he does, okay? It's a service capacity test in a nutshell. So if you think about that, you got a bull out there for 10 minutes. How many times do you think he would service those females? Anybody have a guess? I heard a two. Okay. Range of services, anywhere from 0 to 5, sometimes more. Really, really variable depending on the bull. Okay. So this is what a service capacity test to measure libido in a research setting. Same study that we talked about, the BSE scores, looked at libido, and it talked about bulls with a real high libido, bulls with a medium libido. They didn't even evaluate the pregnancy rate on the bulls with the low libido. They just weren't comfortable with that. Okay, so this was more of a yes-no question. Are they of this libido or not? And there was no differences in pregnancy rates among those bulls with a high libido or a medium libido. So these are not an indicator of fertility, but a bull certainly has to be able to get up and have the drive, the sex drive, to go out and breed these cows. Another thing to point out, if some of you did come from the south, come up the coast a little ways, or have any type of Bos indicus influence in your herds, the Bos indicus type cattle do have an inherent lower libido compared with the Bos taurus cattle. So when we're talking about synchronization using Bos indicus bulls, that gets to be a different conversation entirely. Okay, another thing we're going to mention just briefly is some things that we don't quite have rationale for. We're going to talk about some variability that's out there in terms of bull preferences. So if we have a cow that became pregnant, how many times do you think that particular cow was bred to get that pregnancy established? Obviously, on the low end of a range, we've got one. Okay? She was pregnant. Okay, what do you think in terms of the upper end? Anybody have a clue? How many times do you think these cows will actually get bred? This particular paper said the one cow was bred 27 times. Okay? Average, across the board average, a cow that became pregnant was bred 4 times. Okay? So that's step one of this little slide here. Now, if we've got females that are in estrus, females in estrus all over, how many of those females, what proportion of those females do we think actually got bred? These are all estrus females. What proportion of females in heat actually got bred? Okay, and this is a summary of probably 13, 14 different papers that looked at the range in this proportion. So here, somewhere between 60% of the females and 80% of the females that were in heat actually became bred. So, if we do a little bit of math, the number of physical services a bull does is generally way greater than the number of females that are in a group. Okay? So he bred this cow 27 times, but there's this group, 20 to 40%, that were never bred. So why is it that bulls can be so selective and say, you know what, I've got this cow who's in heat right next to me and I'm not going to touch her? Okay, so there's some of this preference stuff that's this is just natural and we don't exactly know what's going on there. But what we do know is that as more of these cows become pregnant, okay, more of those cows up there, the bulls become much less selective and they get those cows pregnant later in the breeding season. Okay, this is something inherent to bulls that needs to be considered when we're talking about natural service breeding systems. All right, so all those things lead up to the next question of stocking rate. So where should we be with natural service breeding systems? This particular work looked at a non-synchronized group, and all these groups were 100 heifers. I'm going to put 100 heifers in a pasture that's between 200 and 300 acres. Okay, 100 heifers in each of these pastures. And they just put 2, 4, or 6 bulls in and then looked at the response in terms of pregnancy rates, days to conception, those type of reproductive indicators. Things to point out here. Their proportion of cattle that were pregnant by 28 days was much greater in these bulls that were stocked to 16 cows compared with the ones out here at 50. Okay? So this is something to look at. The other thing is that in terms of days to conception, days to conception is basically calculated off of fetal size. So you say you go in and you palpate or you ultrasound. You said the fetal size is this big. Back calculate, okay, it must have conceived on this day. So those cows that were in the stocking group of 1 to 16 became pregnant earlier, had a lower days to conception, and this is a good thing compared with these other groups. This paper also had a pretty significant economic analysis that was attached to it. And at the end of the day, they found that this 1 to 25 was actually the best dollar value in terms of stocking rates for these estrus synchronized females. This is just more of a food for thought than anything else. This is a graph that reflects a little bit of data that I'm collecting with our extension veterinarian, Charlie Stoltenau. We call this project the Preg Card. So we go in, we're working with veterinarians in our state, and every time they conduct a pregnancy examination on a beef herd, they fill out a couple of quick questions. So how many cattle did you check? How many were open? And then answers to a few basic reproductive management questions. Did your bulls have a BSE? Did you vaccinate your cows? Okay, this kind of thing. And we use this data to look at stocking rates. Okay, And so food for thought here, if our NOMS data says our average stocking rate is right about here, 1 to 25 cows per bull. As we move out into these other stocking rates, though, so 25 to 36, 36 plus, okay, there are no differences in pregnancy rates among these different stocking rate categories. Now, this is not a designed scientific study. This is, for all practical purposes, survey data that says this is what's going on out there in our industry. But it was interesting to note that as we get up into these heavier stocking rates, our bulls are still managing to get cows pregnant through the end of a breeding season. All right, so bull recommendations. To kind of summarize all these things up, age of 2+, pass the breeding soundness exam, a satisfactory, high libido, and then normal stocking rates. But the most important part of this slide right here is the bottom. Watch groups very closely. So if you think about what we're doing, depending on the synchronization system that we're using, you're going to take the work of 21 days of bull time, and you're going to shrink this down to 3 to 5 days. Okay? So any injury, anything that happens during that time, we look at this bull in particular, he's not going to go out there and breed any cows for us. It's done. Okay? So we need to watch our groups very closely and then ask this question down here. What's our backup plan? So if something does happen, who are you going to turn out? Where are you going to house them? And I make this point about natural service synchronization systems, but this is just as important with a cleanup bull and no synchronized cows, or a breeding system where you just turn out that bull from day one. So what's the backup plan? All right, on the cow side, if you guys take a look at this particular group of cattle, how do you think they'd respond to synchronization? We got good body condition, poor body condition. What's going to happen if we try to do this with this group of cows?
Lots of ribs.
Lots of ribs on there. Okay? So, the cow conditions, we'll start back up in a little step. Dr. Smith talked about some recommendations for AI breeding protocols. Okay? Those were, there's a table on page 43 of the proceedings. Talked about a threshold of body condition score. Talked about 40 days postpartum. Talked about a low incidence of calving difficulty. So are these things important in terms of a natural service synchronization system? Okay, we've got some people shaking their heads say, yep, they're more important. And when I think about it, when I really think about it, I think the importance may actually be greater in a natural service breeding system compared with an artificial insemination breeding system. And that's because in order to get bred in a natural service breeding system, you've got to see heat. And a tremendous amount of time and resources have gone into creating estrus synchronization protocols for artificial insemination that help out these non-cyclic cows. Okay, tremendous resources have gone that way. And here we are with natural service. We've got to have those cows show heat. So these things are very, very important. Now, when it comes to the synchronization options themselves, these are a touch different with natural service. Okay, we've probably seen some slides like this today. And if you've seen the slides like this, talked about all the different hormones and things that are going on in an estrus cycle, when I see it, my eyes start to glaze over a little bit. Okay, so I'm going to back up a step, and I'm going to say, what is really important here, or at least what can I talk about with my bull breeding systems? And I got it back down to two things. And I'm content with these two things right now. Okay? Progesterone and prostaglandin. So progesterone produced by a CL. We know we've got ovulation. We've got a follicle there. That follicle, we get a CL developed in its place. We come up here 5-6 days. That progesterone is elevated, maintained until just before the next estrus and ovulation. Progesterone goes down. This CL, progesterone here produced by a CL, that CL is lysed by a couple pulses of prostaglandin. Exact placement of the prostaglandin on that chart might be debatable. But the whole point is those pulses of prostaglandin lyse that CL, cause that cow to come back into estrus. These are the important things. And again, prostaglandin administered at any time after, you know, and again, exact timing is a little debatable, but there are a 5-day CEDAR protocol, right? You give an injection of prostaglandin 5 days after and we have a lysis of a CL. So beginning right in here sometime, it doesn't always work, that CL becomes responsive to prostaglandin, lyses the CL, that cow shows estrus a few days later. Before we get into any intervention, we're going to talk about what is normal. And again, we're going to start in a perfect world. In a perfect world, all of our cows are cycling. Okay, does this happen very often? Depending on which reviews you read, we've had as low as 15% of cows cycling at the beginning of the breeding season. That's not good. You know, you get into some areas of the country and they're very, very high proportion of cows cycling. But for our purposes here, we're going to say that all of our cows are cycling. And then this is just simple math, right? How many cows are in heat every single day of an estrus cycle? Cyclic cows. So we've got one day divided by 21 days in an estrus cycle. That gives us 4 point something, roughly 5% of those cows are in heat every day. Again, we do a little bit more math that says in about 5 days, a quarter of those cows would show heat. In about 10 days, just shy of 50% of those. Now, this one I calculated out for all of these different protocols, which is an average day of conception. Okay, so on average, 10 days is right in the middle of 0 and 21. So the average day to conception with no intervention would be about day 10. So the first protocol we're going to talk about is a one-shot prostaglandin protocol. Right? The whole theory here, again, this is back to our little graph of the progesterone and prostaglandin treatment. Any cow that is responsive to prostaglandin, if you give an injection, will lyse this CL, and they will be into heat several days later. So the one shot of prostaglandin, you give a cow, all your cows, injections of prostaglandin, and then turn them out with the bulls, right? And again, kind of a breakdown similar to what we had in the no intervention, okay? Within the first 5 days after this injection of prostaglandin, and again, this is theoretical, this is not data, data's on the next slides, okay? Theoretically, we would have 76% of those cows in heat within the first 5 days. So all of these cows here would come into heat. Then we've got these cows. They didn't respond to that prostaglandin. Okay? So they're going to wait and wait and wait. And about 16 to 21 days later, those cows that were in the early stages of their estrus cycle, they would go ahead and show estrus and be bred. So if we do a little math there, the average day of conception, theoretically, is about day 6.8. And if we recall from this slide back here, the average day to conception with no intervention is day 10. So we go 6.8 minus 10, an advantage of potentially 3.2 days in calf age. And again, natural service economics are a lot different than artificial insemination economics, okay? If we go in and we look at what's happening here, people say they want to use artificial insemination because it's going to increase the value of that calf through a genetic advantage or something like that. Natural service, we don't have that. We have calf age. We have calving distribution on the calf side. Okay, so these are the type of things we need to look at in terms of advantages. So this number gets to be very, very important when we evaluate whether these are appropriate for our operations. Okay, here's a couple of papers that looked at the one shot of prostaglandin. And this is, what is the pregnancy rate attained within the first 5 days after that injection of prostaglandin? Okay, significantly greater pregnancy rate in those cattle that were given prostaglandin compared with the controls. Overall, there's no difference in pregnancy rate attainment at the end of the year. So those are the same out here. Another thing to note, there were two different prostaglandin treatments in this study. One is just prostaglandin at the time of bull turnout, and the other was a two-injection prostaglandin program where you give an injection of prostaglandin, 14 days later give another injection of prostaglandin, and then turn out the bulls. And there was no advantage of that two-shot prostaglandin program when it was within the confines of this study. Okay, the next one I'm going to talk about is a day 4 or day 5 prostaglandin. Okay, there's some papers that have looked at it both ways. Again, the theory behind this one, what you're trying to do, you turn a bull out, and he's out there for 4 or 5 days. He's servicing all of these cattle that would naturally come into heat. Okay, so again, we said within 5 days, you got about a quarter of your cows that show heat, right? That's what's going to happen there. At that point in time, we run all those cows through, and we give an injection of prostaglandin. So if at bolt turnout, we had a cow who was here somewhere, and we wait 5 days, all of a sudden, she's going to go from a very low progesterone content to a progesterone content that's higher, and most likely her CL will be responsive to prostaglandin. Okay? So if we're following here, all of those cattle will now respond to prostaglandin, and these ones sometime between day 5 and day 10 after bull turnout. So we look at that math again. About a quarter of them in heat in the first 5 days. Now 100% of these cattle would be in heat within the first 10 days of the breeding season. Okay, an average date of conception, if you look at that, day 6.8, is the same exact date of conception as the previous one where I gave a shot of prostaglandin at the time of bull turnout. Okay, so it was really interesting how that math worked out on those. We built a great big spreadsheet to look at all these different things, and at the end of the day, we had the same exact answer in terms of date of conception. Now, some things that might be going on here. There is a biostimulatory effect of bulls. Okay? You turn a bull in, and there's something about the pheromone, something about the having the bull there that does cause some cattle to initiate cyclicity. So these are cattle that are somewhere getting close to estrus. That biostimulatory effect drives them closer to estrus. Typically, that takes longer than 5 days. But if you're going to point out a difference between those two protocols, the potential for a bull effect is here in response to some of that prostaglandin, or some of the bull exposure, rather. So this first study is looking in heifers. And this was 5 days after bull turnout. These cattle were run in. This is Rick Funston's lab did this report. So 5 days after bull turnout, cattle were run in and given prostaglandin. Very, very short breeding season. These bulls were only with the cows for an additional 20 days after the prostaglandin. Okay? And Rick, if that's wrong, correct me. But very, very short breeding season on this particular study. Okay? And what we saw there, what they saw there, is there was actually a reduction in overall pregnancy rate for those cattle that were treated with prostaglandin 5 days after bull turnout compared with those that were just control animals. However, what was seen and what's consistently seen in these reports, this is how many of those cows actually, or heifers rather, calved within the first 21 days of the breeding or calving season. And again, a greater proportion of those animals, about a 10% improvement in the proportion of heifers that calved within the first 21 days of the calving season. So there's definitely an effect here in terms of calf age. All right, now this one actually was an injection of prostaglandin given on day 4 after bull turnout. Okay, and these are in cows and with a much longer breeding season. Okay, so the number of cattle that became pregnant between days 5 and 9, again, that's about a 5-day window of time. About a quarter of our control cattle became pregnant there. However, when we look at those cattle that were given prostaglandin on day 4, much greater proportion became pregnant during that synchronized period. Okay. In addition to that, this particular study showed an advantage in overall calving rate of those cows that were given an injection of prostaglandin 4 days after bull turnout. Okay. So that's another case. And again, we look at this. Cow cyclicity probably, at the start of breeding season, probably has a lot to do with this response. Next protocol that we're going to just briefly touch over is a 7-day seeder protocol. And theory behind this one is if you administer a seeder for 7 days, you're basically stopping all of these cows that normally would have shown estrus. You're stopping all of them from showing estrus until the time that cedar gets pulled out. Once that cedar gets pulled out, those cows would go ahead and show heat. Another thing that could be going on here, and this is back to theory, is that administration of progesterone, progestins, can induce, again, some of those cows that are close to cyclicity, can jumpstart those. We talked about, you know, long-term MGA or 14-day seeder protocols, kick-starting heifers into estrus. Okay, the same kind of concept in theory, and that's why we use some of the progestins in our estrus synchronization systems. Okay, so those are the two things that could be going on here. When we do the math, we work it all out. Percent in heat in the first 5 days, about 57. How many of those actually came into heat in the first 10 days? That would be about 80%. Do the math, average days to conception, 6. The difference from non-synchronized cattle, about 4 days. Okay? So that's, again, theoretical, not looking at any of the possible impacts that progestins could have on kickstarting some of these cattle into heat. Well, at the end of the day, there was no difference in overall pregnancy rates among these treatments. And these are pregnancy rates at the end of the breeding season. And this is a pretty substantial data set, about 1,750 cows contributed to these data. And no differences in pregnancy rates, but what there was a difference in days to conception. So the process again here at day 56, we went in and did a fetal age with ultrasound on all of these calves, estimated date of conception. And there was a 3-day advantage in date of conception for those cattle that were treated with a seeder compared with those cows that were on the control treatment. Okay? So then the question is, well, is 3 days worthwhile? Is 3 days at the end of the day worth the input cost of a seeder? Is it worth the 2 times handling that it took to actually get the synchronization project done? And I'll leave that question up to you guys to decide, because that's who ultimately makes the choice. Okay, again, we thought that potentially some of these non-cyclic cattle would be benefiting from insertion of a seeder. And one thing we didn't do was ascertain what the cyclic status of these cows was. Okay, so that's an issue right there. But in theory, we have more cows that are early postpartum, so less than 40, less than 50 days. A greater proportion of those would be non-cyclic compared with cows that had had a little bit more time to repair and recover. So we charted the days to conception based on these days postpartum groups. So if we looked at the left over here, there are no difference in days to conception among those treatments. Those cows that got a seeder in the yellow, those cows that were control in the white. No difference in days to conception in those groups of cows that were less than 50 days postpartum. As we moved on, though, to cows that had more time to repair and recover, a greater proportion of those cows that were treated with the seeder, or not greater proportion, they became pregnant earlier in the breeding season compared with the control. Okay. The other thing to point out, as we moved from cows that had not had a lot of time to repair to those that were early calving, our days to conception was reduced. Those cows became pregnant earlier in the breeding season. All right, so a couple of slides were actually pointed out about the location effect in response to different synchronization programs, right? That's pretty well established. Just wanted to throw this up here for a few seconds to talk about the difference in locations in pregnancy attainment. Okay, and we're all over the board. The cattle that did the absolute best, location 2, on average became pregnant on day 12.7 of the breeding season. Move that up here. Location 4, 31.0 days into the breeding season, their average cow became pregnant. So big variation from location to location in responses to just bull exposure. This isn't even broken out by treatment. Okay, I like to put this slide up there because of there are some possible issues anytime we're dealing with seeders in cattle. And anybody seen one of those before? This is a season-ending preg check. Okay, these cattle were bred 150 days prior to this, and that was a little seeder that was left in. Okay, when you're doing bull breeding, and we've all seen this, we go to AI breed a cow, and there's still a seeder in there. Okay, that happens. We don't put our arm in every single one of these cattle that are bull bred natural service systems. So that can be an issue. Luckily, this particular animal, she did become pregnant. It was just much, much later than everyone else. So the bull had to work around some obstacles to get that done. All right, this one has no data. This is all theory, and I hate that, but without that, we go in, and so many of our estrus synchronization protocols, we're talking about a 5-day CEDAR protocol. We're talking about a 7-day CEDAR protocol, okay? So what happens if we need to have a quick fix and we've got to bull breed some of those cows instead of AI them? Again, we'll go back up to our little slide here with the different stages of the estrus cycle. Now, normally, again, we would expect those cows to show estrus. We're stopping them from coming into estrus with the CEDAR. All of these cows here, during that time period, they're getting a CL that is receptive to prostaglandin. We come in, all of those cows can respond to prostaglandin. That gives us 100% of our cyclic cattle. And again, all those ones that read a book and they're following what's supposed to theoretically happen, 100% of those are going to be in heat within the first 5 days. We can actually narrow down that window to say there's going to be about 3 days that it is going to be crazy out there in those pens. Okay? Average day to conception, we'll call it day 3. Difference from non-synchronized would be a 7-day advantage. Okay? There's a table in there where it compare the different types of synchronization systems. Okay, I don't know why that's got a line through it, but that's the case. What I want to point out, these are the 5-day interval, the 10-day interval that we've talked about. Look at this, the potential conception advantage versus non-synchronized. As we move from system to system, that's your potential increase in calf age at the end of the day. Okay, and then down below, again, this is another assumption. If you've got 2 pounds per day of calf gain, right, this is a potential weaning weight advantage in those systems. Again, for the cyclic cows that do respond. So these are maximums. This would probably not be realized at all. If anything, it would only be lower due to those non-cyclic cows. Okay, so I think these are the theoretical maximums that you can get when you're breeding with natural service in terms of weaning weight difference and advantage in calf age. So other things that I just want to point out, you can really, any synchronized group of cattle, this is definitely an option. And I used to say you can use this to avert a wreck. If something happens, if you're the only guy in the place and you break your arm the day before you got to breed all these cattle, what are you going to do? Okay? If you have a shipper tank that came in and it is dry and you evaluate that semen and there is nothing there, what are you going to do? You've already invested a tremendous amount of time and resources into synchronizing your cows, okay? So how do we manage that from the bull end? And the one thing we really need to point out, so many of our systems at the time of breeding or near the time of breeding, we administer GnRH. This would be really bad in a bull breeding situation. We can kind of short-circuit that actual standing estrus, and it just wouldn't be good. So no GnRH near the time of breeding. When you do that, definitely a consideration you need to have there. Okay, so review. We just select bulls that are appropriate for your cows. Again, we've got age characteristics. We've got some libido and BSE characteristics. There's a lot of different options out there for synchronization. And in effect, what we're really doing here is we're moving that proportion of calves that are born early with our synchronization. We're shifting a higher proportion of those calves into the first few days of the calving season. And in all cases, we need to watch those bulls very closely to make sure we don't have any injuries or anything like that and take care of them promptly if we do have some issues. So that's all I have for you today.